You're in the grand theme of things. The Logbook.com soundtrack mixtape podcast is back with more selections, all centered around a single theme. A setting, similar plots, maybe something else. Something connects all the music you'll be hearing today. I'm Earl Green. Sit back and relax and enjoy a little bit of free association with music from movies, TV, and games. It's all in the grand theme of things. Welcome back to In the Grand Theme of Things. Brace yourselves, this episode was inevitable. Welcome to Who at 50, celebrating 50 years of music from Doctor Who. I'll wait here while the people not interested in Doctor Who just kind of hit the stop button. Real early on, I decided I was going to try to avoid doing what I call franchise nights, where it would be something like, hey, let's play a bunch of Star Wars music. The problem with that is that a bunch of Star Wars music is all done in the voice and the style of one composer. Now, we've already done a Gatchaman episode or two, and that's because the franchise has passed through the hands of several composers, each of whom brought a different style to it. And that is definitely the case with Doctor Who. Doctor Who premiered on the BBC in 1963, celebrated its 50th anniversary in November 2013. Throughout 2013, Silver Screen Records began unleashing some gems from the music archives of the BBC and the various composers who have worked on the show, although they promised us that the year was going to be filled with re-releases and music we hadn't heard before, and in the end, what we got were three single CDs, each containing the full score for a particular story, and a four-CD best-of collection, which, while it did have a certain amount of material we had heard before, was also dazzling for what it dug out of the archives that we hadn't had before. The four CD set presages the release of a massive 11-disc box set spanning the entire history of the series, which still has yet to come out as of this recording. I'm recording this in September of 2014. Supposedly, the bare-bones vanilla version of this box set will be coming out later this month for those who have bought it. Considering that the bare-bones version of the box set, which does not include the giant wooden TARDIS box complete with flashing lights and sound chip, still comes in at well over $100. Rabid fan that I am of both Doctor Who and soundtrack music, I didn't order it. So I can't tell you what all is on the 11-disc box set because unless someone sells one real cheap into the secondary market, I'm not going to be able to get my hands on it. I do, however, have the 4-CD set, and it's very interesting stuff. Doctor Who has a wildly varied musical history that spans the entire history of analog and digital synthesizers, as well as orchestral scoring. For much of the 70s, Doctor Who was scored orchestrally. This is not a new thing that is exclusive to the modern series. However, it was scored by small ensembles because the music budget was the last thing that money was thrown at and the first thing to be cut if a particular episode was running over budget. Dudley Simpson scored most of Doctor Who from 1964 through 1979 until, quite simply, he was told his services were no longer needed. There was a change of guard at the BBC, and there was a change in the producer's chair of Doctor Who. And it was simply decided that his sound was yesterday. The last episode with a Dudley Simpson score aired early in 1980. Dudley Simpson is also, curiously, for someone who scored the show for 15 years, there is a large gap of material left over from him because he didn't keep all of his tapes. The BBC didn't keep them either. They just simply didn't have the room to store reels and reels of music that had a single application for a single show. And so a lot of Dudley Simpson's 15 years of scoring Doctor Who is completely lost to us, although a few gems have surfaced. And those are among the best stuff on the Doctor Who 50th Anniversary Soundtrack Collection that Silver Screen released, because quite simply, we have not had genuine Dudley Simpson Doctor Who music before. Also featured in this little suite that I've put together is music by Don Harper, Jeffrey Bergen, and Kerry Blyton, other composers who worked on the show in the 70s. I'm trying to remember. There may even be some Tristram Cary in here. It's been so long since I edited the music together, I forget what all is in it. But it's a very good representative sample of the sound of Doctor Who as composed for specific episodes by various composers in the late 60s and the 1970s. There are many instances in the 60s where Doctor Who was not really scored by an individual. It was scored by Needledrop. The BBC had access to various broadcast library music selections, and they would frequently recur in the 1960s because it was just more economic to say, never mind with getting the show scored, you know, with a custom-made music score, let's just do some needle drops and be done with it. Silverscreen managed to license quite a bit of this stock music for both the 4-CD set and the upcoming 11-CD set, which is, it's quite an expensive proposition, really, licensing all that music. And so they have to be commended for that. Anyway, I'll get out of your way here. Here are some interesting and very quirky selections from Doctor Who in the 1960s and 70s.
Thank you.
The music was from 1960s and 70s Doctor Who, including composers such as Kerry Blyton, Jeffrey Bergen, Dudley Simpson, and Don Harper. Nifty music from the 1969 Patrick Troughton story, The Invasion. Amazingly, the tapes still survive. Now, most of the 70s, tapes are gone. It just depends on what the composer kept in his personal collection that has been able to be restored and remastered for digital release. 1960s Doctor Who was on the mind of quite a bit of fandom throughout the 50th anniversary, not least of which was because there were 9 episodes previously lost, because there are large chunks of the show that don't even exist on film or video anymore, because the BBC, quite simply, ran out of space to keep tapes around, tapes and films. The only reason we have as much of black and white 1960s Doctor Who as we do is because the show was also sold abroad. And so a lot of those tapes have come back. They have been matched up to soundtracks that were recorded on open reel or cassette tape by fans down through the years, just because they're fans. It's what fans do. I mean, I remember recording Doctor Who episodes like that before there were VCRs in the consumer market. And so now we have complete episodes again that, according to BBC Records, should have been junked long ago, because at the time there was no home video market. There was no future potential seen in the material. Doctor Who is far from the only show to have been butchered like this. I mean, there are some entire series that are completely missing. The only indication that they ever existed is production paperwork that's still in the BBC's archives. Because there's room to store all the paper, but not tapes or films. God, that would be silly. One of the highlights of the 2013 anniversary season was not an episode of Doctor Who at all. It was a standalone movie chronicling the beginnings of the show. Even if you were not interested in Doctor Who, the movie itself does not lean heavily on in-jokes or insider knowledge. It's not completely inside baseball. It tells you the story of how the show got its start. And I'm going to say it's about 75% accurate. A lot of people are composited into slightly fictionalized versions of themselves, and a lot of credit is given to Sidney Newman, who is a producer and department head at the BBC, under whose watch Doctor Who was created. A lot of people point to Sidney Newman as kind of the Gene Roddenberry of Doctor Who, but there really is, you know, where you can acknowledge that Star Trek came from the mind of Gene Roddenberry. Doctor Who was created by committee. Sidney Newman was at the head of the table at the meetings. But generally, it is now acknowledged as his creation, which is probably a bit of an oversimplification, and it certainly is for the purposes of the movie. But the movie is still incredibly well done, with old sets and props being meticulously recreated, which is something fandom has been doing for years, but now the BBC was throwing money at it. And you get this incredible recreation of the original set. And in actor David Bradley, you have an incredible recreation of William Hartnell, the original actor who played the Doctor. The music for An Adventure in Space and Time, which was the name of the movie about the show's beginnings, was done by Edmund Butt. Edmund Butt also did music for other mind-bending, time-hopping BBC shows, such as Life on Mars and Ashes to Ashes. So his pedigree for this sort of thing is not in question. It is interesting how different the music for An Adventure in Space and Time is from your average Doctor Who episode. In some cases, it's very haunting and memorable, and I've kind of found myself wishing while I was watching the movie the first time, whoever's doing the music for this, they need to actually get him on proper Doctor Who and start alternating him with Murray Gold, because it's really good music. Here are some highlights from An Adventure in Space and Time, music by Edmund Butt. Thank you. Those were highlights from An Adventure in Space and Time, music composed by Edmund Butt. That was the 50th anniversary sort of companion movie, if you will, detailing the origins of the show and its mythology. Even if you're not into Doctor Who, it's worth a watch. And the thing is, it kind of by osmosis, it catches you up on so much stuff, you might actually find yourself interested. Who knows? Stranger things have happened. One strange thing that has happened to Doctor Who is that in 1989, at the end of its 1989 season, it was canceled by the BBC. The ratings had fallen, not least of which because BBC department heads had scheduled it opposite a massively popular competing primetime soap opera. And oddly enough, a 26-year-old sci-fi show could not really hold its own against that kind of competition. The BBC never issued an official announcement saying, "We are canceling Doctor Who." It just didn't reappear on the schedule in 1990. Throughout the 90s, the story was picked up in print, in comics, then finally in the late 90s in audio form. Now, the people who started producing official Doctor Who audios had been doing it since the late 80s as an amateur venture called the Audio Visuals. Many of those involved in the Audio Visuals formed a company called Big Finish Productions. And Big Finish Productions produces 13 full-length Doctor Who stories for audio sold directly on CD or download every year. And let me tell you this, if you don't like what the show is doing on TV, or if you don't have time to watch as much Doctor Who as you like, but you do have long drives, go to BigFinish.com. These people are doing Doctor Who in a classic style, but with modern touches. It has gotten better and better year after year until it honestly rivals the TV show for originality and just good drama, and in some cases comedy. Think about Doctor Who is it's about a guy who travels in time in a 1950s police phone box. Yes, there is room for comedy in Doctor Who. Seems like any time they tried to do, balls-to-the-wall comedy in anything Star Trek, people just broke out in hives because Star Trek is serious business and it has a stick permanently implanted in its ass. No such luck with Doctor Who. It has room to laugh at itself, and in many cases it has, sometimes unintentionally. Big Finish marked the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who with a special all-star gathering of past series doctors called The Light at the End. This starred all the ones you actually remember from PBS. Tom Baker, Peter Davison, Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, and Paul McGann from the 1996 Fox TV movie, who has appeared on television only twice, but has lived this incredible lifespan in audio form, because Big Finish saw so much potential in that iteration of the character that they simply wouldn't let him exist with only two adventures on the books. Frequent flyer Big Finish staff composer Jamie Robertson composed the music for The Light at the End, and he took an interesting approach to it in that he decided that he was going to try to create a theme for the Doctor, all the Doctors, to rival the theme that Matt Smith's Doctor had on TV at the time. Complete with kind of a rock and roll element to it, and yet still orchestral, or at least synth orchestral, because Big Finish is not a large enough venture to throw money at hiring out a full orchestra. So, you wind up with synthesizer and sample orchestras on Big Finish Productions, although sometimes you would be hard-pressed to tell, because that technology is growing by leaps and bounds as well. Here are a few short selections from Jamie Robertson's score from The Light at the End, Big Finish Productions' 50th anniversary Doctor Who audio story. Music from Doctor Who, The Light at the End, 50th anniversary all-star Doctor Who story that you could hear rather than see. If you're interested in more where that came from, the story where that came from is still available, go to bigfinish.com. And finally, we have selections from the 2013 season of Doctor Who, scored by none other than Murray Gold. selections from, as they call it, Series 7 of the modern-day Doctor Who series, scored by Murray Gold, the BBC National Orchestra of Wales. That's it for our Doctor Who at 50 installment. While I still stick by my guns that anytime you're doing a franchise, it shouldn't just play music by one person. Doctor Who has been around for half a century, and its musical voice has been dictated by more composers than most franchises go through in half that time. As for the future of Doctor Who, as much as I like Murray Gold's style, and he has proven diverse enough to transition from one administration to another, as Russell T. Davies gave up the producer's chair to Stephen Moffat, there is a similarity of style running through Murray Gold's work that points toward, I think, a need to start alternating him, at the very least, alternating him with someone else. The problem there is how the BBC handles music for the show. The music on modern Doctor Who is handled much like the music from classic Star Trek, and it's handled like library music. It's edited into multiple episodes. If they were to do that with the work of two composers, that would cost potentially twice as much. As it is, they only pay Murray Gold once to record all this stuff, and then they can use it freely throughout the season. So the chances of a composer change in modern Doctor Who are slim to none. I like Murray Gold's work, but at the same time, we've kind of had the same style for about 10 years. However, this goes back to Dudley Simpson, who scored much of Doctor Who from 1964 through 79. We liked his style just fine for the 15 years that he was on the show. So perhaps Murray Gold is trying to match Dudley Simpson for longevity. I think he can certainly already outstrip him just for the amount of material that has been generated. Thanks for listening to the Doctor Who at 50 special on In the Grand Theme of Things. Stick around next time. You may hear something even stranger. That's all for now. In the Grand Theme of Things, we'll be back next week with more movie, TV, and game music connected by a common theme. Just a reminder, all of the music you've heard is copyrighted by the respective composers, labels, and studios. Visit www.thelogbook.com/music/podcast for a listing of what you heard in this installment and links to purchase your own copies. Due to restrictions on file size and storage, what you've heard today was presented at a fairly low audio quality. By purchasing the commercially available CDs or downloads, you can hear it even better. I strongly encourage you to support the labels that are taking the time and expense to remaster and reissue classic soundtrack music. They're making music available to which longtime movie and TV music fans have never dreamed of having access, and I hope you'll join me in supporting them. In the Grand Theme of Things is written, produced, and hosted by Earl Green.